You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Joe Moore. Last month, National Park Service officials made headlines when they announced their plan to remove the historic names from many of Yosemite National Park's treasured amenities, like the Awani Hotel and Curry Village. It sparked a public outcry. It was a bold move in a legal dispute. It's ongoing between the government, outgoing Yosemite concessions company Delaware North, and Aramark, which is set to take over operations next month thanks to a new $2 billion concessions contract. Delaware North says it owns the old names and wants Aramark to pay over $50 million for the rights to use them. It's all the subject of the ongoing lawsuit. Delaware North says it even trademarked the name Yosemite National Park itself. But what does this say about the commercialization of our national parks and specifically the way Yosemite is run? That issue is one that's been the topic of controversy for decades, and no one knows that more than our next guest. Robert Benoist was the superintendent of Yosemite from 1979 to 1986, and he has a new book out about the park, his controversial tenure there, and its future. Mr. Benoist, welcome to Valley Edition.
Well, thank you very much.
This issue of intellectual property, Delaware North says it goes way back to when they took over for the Curry Company. You dealt with the Curry Company during your tenure at Yosemite. What was the situation with the names back then? And was this ever something that was considered, that a private company would trademark these sorts of names?
Well, to put this in perspective, I think first it's well to recall that these historic names in Yosemite go back for many, many, many years. I think starting with the granddaddy of them all, the Wawona Hotel, that was named that by Mrs. Henry Washburn in 1884. So these are all historic names that we have all known for years. I don't think anyone anticipated that a company would try to trademark these names. As you point out, including the name Yosemite National Park, which Delaware North claims it has trademarked to be used on T-shirts and coffee mugs and other commercial products that it develops. So I think the idea of these trademark names came as a great surprise to everyone. Delaware North apparently went through a legal process in about 2003 to gather the trademarks together. That was a legal process, but it was also a very quiet process. No one was really paying attention, so to speak. And so when Delaware North subsequently claimed that these names are worth millions of dollars and that the new concessionaire Aramark should pay for them, everyone was startled.
I've heard some people suggest that essentially by announcing this name change, the National Park Service and Aramark are in some ways calling Delaware North's bluff, saying, okay, if you're going to play hardball, here's our move. Those names really aren't worth all that much to you if no one is using them, and leaving open the possibility that the name change to these new, rather generic-sounding names could be relatively temporary if some sort of a deal is reached, maybe getting down that $50 million asking price.
Well, you know, and I think most of us hope that the bluff will be called. It's going to be pretty amazing if the Awani Hotel is changed to the Majestic Yosemite Hotel as proposed, and that these other names are going to be changed. From my perspective, and I think this perspective is shared by a lot of people, it would be well to pull this whole issue out of the courts, have the parties sit down around a table, and come to an agreement on how to get this resolved in a way that will protect the historic names in Yosemite.
I think a lot of people here in Central California who visit Yosemite regularly would be somewhat surprised to know that it really is a big business involved in operating these concessions. How much of that is the problem here? There's a lot of money, a lot of corporate assets at stake, a lot of corporate interests at stake here. When we're really thinking about the national parks, most of the time we think about the public trust and this is the people's place. How do you see that as it evolved over Yosemite's tenure with the Curry Company and then now these mega corporations?
You're so right. I think most people see Yosemite as a combination of wonderful values. It's an immense nature preserve. As we all know, it's a absolutely spectacular natural art piece, and it's a historic and cultural gem, all these things rolled into one, a real public treasure. But it also happens to be, and has been from the start, an economic engine of considerable scale. You mentioned that the current 15-year contract at the company Aramark will be taking over on March 1st is estimated to be worth $2 billion. That's a billion, like with a B at the beginning. And so Yosemite from the start has been involved in this contest between nature preservation and economic development. During my tenure at Yosemite, we approved something called the 1980 General Management Plan, which was a fairly substantive attempt to draw a bright line between commercial activity in the park and the overriding responsibility to preserve the natural beauty of Yosemite. We were able to accomplish that in 1980. That plan was put on the shelf for many, many years to come. More recently, the National Park Service has been able to take that plan a step further and actually establish a use capacity in Yosemite Valley of about 18,000 people per day on a heavily traveled day in the summertime to really contain the commercial pressure that has always existed within the park and try to encourage further commercialism to be developed beyond the park boundaries in the gateway communities. That's an ongoing contest. There doesn't seem to be an immediate end in sight. This whole name change controversy is just one example of companies that are trying to, quote, cash in, unquote, on the fame of Yosemite.
How do you think the park is faring when it comes to limiting that capacity?
When I was serving in Yosemite in the 1980s, the annual visitation to the park was about 2 million people per year, and we were suffering traffic gridlock even in those days. The current level of visitation in Yosemite is 4 million people per year, so visitation has doubled in the park since the approval of the 1980 plan. Yosemite Valley is 7 miles long and about a mile wide. It's a 7-square-mile area, really a very small part of the overall park. It has to have a use capacity, just like any other popular venue in the United States, whether to stretch the analogy, whether it's a football stadium or an opera house or a basketball arena. These places have a use capacity, and Yosemite Valley is just the same. You cannot continue to cram more and more people into a place like that and still expect visitors to have the kind of experience that we all would want when we're visiting a place like Yosemite.
If you just joined us today on Valley Edition, we're talking with former Yosemite National Park Superintendent Robert Benowies. He ran the park from 1979 to 1986. He has a new book out about the park, Your Yosemite, talking about his tenure there, the history of the park, and its future stewardship. We're talking about this, of course, in the context of this controversy over the potential renaming of many of Yosemite's most historic man-made attractions, including the Iwani Hotel and the Wawona Hotel, as part of this change in the Park Service concessionaire. How much can something like politics play a role in the position of being Yosemite superintendent? You were on the inside. You saw how something like this works. Is that a concern still today?
I think that absolutely is a concern. I think it has been. In my own case, I experienced that to the hilt, and I think that politics is always there. There is always a need to convince and inform and educate elected officials, public officials, about the history of a place like Yosemite, how it came to be, what the problems are at the moment, and what our responsibility as stewards is to pass on a place like Yosemite to people yet to come.
You mentioned that you saw those political pressures. In what way?
Well, I was selected as superintendent of Yosemite by Bill Whalen, who was the director of the National Park Service at the time. And that was during the Carter administration. I came to Yosemite. We were working on the 1980 general management plan when political ground shifted. Ronald Reagan was elected president. He, by the way, seemed to be a person that really appreciated Yosemite and had camped in the backcountry. But he appointed someone named James Watt to be Secretary of the Interior. And very soon after that, Bill Whalen was removed as director of the National Park Service. One of the reasons given at the time, reported at the time, was that Bill Whalen was too eager to establish strong preservation controls in Yosemite and to reduce the commercial impact in the park. Bill Whalen left as director. I stayed there, and despite those developments, we were able to get the 1980 plan approved. I stayed in the park until 1986, when I also was ordered to leave the park and go to another job in a regional office in San Francisco.
Your departure from Yosemite that you just mentioned, it was not a planned one. It was not a pleasant one. You surreptitiously recorded a conversation with a park critic, which led to your reassignment to that job. You've had a lot of time to reflect on that. Do you think there were other motives at play? Was that just the story that was put out? Looking back on it now, how do you see it?
I've always thought that there was something else there. I freely admit that I made a real blunder. I didn't do anything that was illegal, but ethically, I made a blunder by recording a conversation with a park critic. Conversation was recorded in 1983, and it wasn't until 3 years later that the issue was brought up again, and I was invited to leave my post at Yosemite. Other people, news reporters, have suggested that there was another agenda there. I've always kind of assumed that there was another agenda, but I've never been able to find out any of the real details.
Gene Rose had a column in the Fresno Bee a couple of weeks ago talking about the connections between Ronald Reagan's former agent and MCA, which at that point was running the Curry Company. Do you think that was part of the issue?
I've always suspected that there was something there, yes.
Is the Park Service today maybe not fraught with those exact issues? Certainly political players change. The companies have changed. It's been a long time since the Curry Company was running Yosemite, since the early 1990s when Delaware North took over. But is the National Park Service you describe sounds like one that is very much in the midst of the political winds that blow and different administrations, different views and those sorts of things? Has that changed in any way?
No, I don't think so. It is an agency of the federal government, and therefore it is influenced as political priorities change. I think, though, all in all, looking over the entire history of the park, there is really very good news out there. And the good news is that slowly but surely, decade after decade, more and more steps are taken to defend and protect the intricate natural processes that occur in a place like Yosemite. And, you know, despite pressures otherwise, the park really, I think, is better protected today than it ever has been, and hopefully will be even better protected in the future.
Do you think there's a better way to deal with these issues of these park concessioners? They certainly wield a lot of power. There's a lot of money there. There are important services to provide, but also those services, as we talked about, have costs as well to the environment, to the park experience. Is there some better way that we aren't looking at right now?
If I could wave my magic wand, I would cause all the commercial operations inside national parks to become not-for-profit corporations, so that when people purchase services within a place like Yosemite, the proceeds from that purchase will be recycled to benefit the park, rather than be sent off to distant shareholders who may have no interest in the park or its legacy. This is not a radical idea. There have been not-for-profits operating in national parks for decades. We were successful during my tenure at Yosemite in initiating what is now a not-for-profit corporation called the Yosemite Conservancy that does a very, very fine job of raising funds for the park to support education and scientific inquiry and restoration of habitat and protection of historic structures. To me, it's not a difficult step to think that we could move from the small not-for-profits that are operating within the national parks to not-for-profits that actually manage concession activities. There are not-for-profits that manage the Mayo Clinic and Stanford University and many, many other large organizations, and I think that not-for-profit would be fully capable of managing something like the Ahwahnee Hotel and then returning the proceeds from that for care of the park. And I think in so doing, there would be a reduction of the conflict between preservation and commercialism in the park.
Robert Benoist was the superintendent of Yosemite National Park from 1979 to 1986. He has a new book out about his tenure there, as well as the park's future. It's called Your Yosemite. In fact, it's been updated online, the ebook version, with new information about this current naming controversy. Mr. Benoist, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're certainly welcome. Thank you.